Thailand's unrest undermines the tourist economy. We get a view from the ground. From APM in New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary, in for David Brancaccio, with the global perspective on business and economics. And we're going to start today in Thailand, where police presence is ramping up before disputed elections on Sunday. The government wants to go to the polls anyway, despite huge anti-government protests that have been going on since November. Protesters have been taking over polling stations, and unrest is rippling through Thailand's economy, especially tourism, a big moneymaker for the country. Our Mark Garrison is in southern Thailand. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Lizzie.
So you sort of accidentally found yourself in the middle of the economic side of this story, witnessing the impact of the unrest on one of Thailand's biggest industries, tourism. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I'm technically on vacation. My wife and I booked our trip before this all started, and we decided to stick with it. But the problem for Thailand is that many people are doing the opposite. We saw thinner crowds at the major tourist attractions and just vacancies at the hotels. So to put this in perspective, tourism in America is just over 2% of GDP. In Thailand, it's more than 7%. And what you really don't see in most of the Western news coverage is that the anti-government groups demonstrating in Bangkok, they're staging rallies in places that are totally off the tourist map. There's little common ground between the two sides in this debate, but they do agree that tourism is vital and they don't want to damage it.
Well, let's broaden it out a little bit. It's been a bumpy couple of days for emerging markets. So what's the economic impact beyond tourism?
Absolutely. I mean, global investors, when they're already nervous in general, they're seeing this unrest in Thailand, that just gives them another reason to think about putting their money elsewhere. There are a number of Japanese automakers that have big plants here. Some of those execs have said they're rethinking plans for future investment. You know, beyond that, also Bangkok is a major regional hub for travel and trade. If this gets a lot worse, it'll have increasing impact beyond Thailand, throughout Asia, and around the world.
Mark Garrison, thank you for taking a little time out to talk to us. I appreciate it.
Happy to do it, Lizzie.
Amazingly, tax season is upon us. Today is the first day you can file, electronically or on paper. But is anyone out there eager to fill out all that paperwork? We wanted to know who files first and why. Sally Herships is on the case.
Let's be honest. Most early filers know they're receiving a refund.
There's certainly no reason for them to let the IRS keep their money for 2 months or more until April 15th.
John Ames is with the National Society of Accountants. He says other early filers qualify for tax credits and want their money. And some want to get their refund in time to save for retirement. Chuck McCabe, president of the Income Tax School, explains.
You can actually deduct the amount that you plan to contribute to an IRA from your tax return, even though you haven't opened the IRA yet.
And McCabe says, even if you owe the IRS, you should still file early. John Ames says filing an extension won't help postpone the real pain.
It's the return that's not due until October 15th. You do not get an extension of time to pay. The money is still due April 15th.
So even if you're disorganized, you're still better off filing early. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
When people talk about Silicon Valley or venture capitalism, a question that gets raised a lot is, are we in a bubble? And traditionally, that means investors are paying more for a company than it's intrinsically worth, as much as $1 billion. Venture capitalist Jalak Jabanputra is making kind of a novel argument. She says, yeah, we're in a bubble, but maybe those crazy price tags are accurate. She joins me now. Good morning.
Good morning.
We try to break through a lot of financial jargon, and you wrote this piece where you said, yes, we're in a bubble, but yes, a company can be worth $1 billion. In plain English, how can those two things be true at the same time?
Well, the companies that are worth $1 billion in the private markets are being valued based on their future growth. And some of them will actually live up to that potential and continue to get customers and take advantage of all the growth that's left globally, right? I mean, I also think that there are a lot of the same types of companies getting funded with these hundreds of millions of dollars. And those are the companies, I think, that just are that are in the bubble and may pop.
An example of this would be a company like Snapdeal in India, which is in a place where
You have a lot of new people in the middle class and a lot of people on mobile.
Absolutely. It's an e-commerce company, and e-commerce is just starting to grow. The potential is very large as more and more Indian consumers get online and start transacting online.
People who remember the late 90s and the early 2000s remember big tech boom, big tech bust. Look at some of these numbers now and think, come on, there's no way these companies can be worth this much money. What do you say to that?
Well, you know, that was certainly an interesting time to be in and has certainly scarred quite a few people. But what I find exciting is that we're finally realizing the potential of a lot of those business models that were around back then and didn't have a chance. I mean, that was maybe negative one inning in a lot of ways. And now we're in the, you know, maybe the second inning. And so there's a lot of growth yet to come. But that time certainly laid the groundwork for a lot of what's happening now.
Jalak Jobanputra is the founder of Future Perfect Ventures. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And finally, it was 22 degrees when I left my house in New York this morning. And according to the Harvard Business Review, that will make me more productive. It turns out that bad weather apparently makes you work harder. In New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.